All right, it's time for our kids' corner, and I think I see one kid here, Ben. So, in commemoration of Halloween, which is not a church holiday per se, I wanted to talk a little bit about superstition. So, knock on wood, this will go well. So, Ben, do you look forward to going trick-or-treating this year? Are you going to do that? Uh-huh. What you going to be? Can you tell me so I recognize you when you come to my door? Or So, Ben, do you know what superstition means? You do or you don't? I can't hear you through Tiger here. You don't? Okay. So superstition is kind of the belief in luck and or bad luck in some circumstances. So I have this little game I wanted to play, lucky or unlucky. So what do you think? Lucky or unlucky? Lucky or unlucky? Lucky seven. Okay, so you might want a picture of that one hanging over your bed, right? How about this one? Lucky or unlucky? No, no, not that one. You don't want that one hanging over your bed, in other words. Okay, all right. So, yeah. How about this one? It even says on the bottom there, so you can, yeah, right. How about this one? Lucky, lucky, right? Okay. And actually, Jeff, I'm not including you in this one. How about this one? Lucky or unlucky? No, no, not that. Lucky or unlucky? Unlucky? All right, let's try another one or two here. And all right, how about this one? That one's lucky. What do you think? Oh, yeah, yeah, that one's definitely lucky right there, right? Okay. So how about this broken mirror here? What do you think on that one? Unlucky? What do you think? What do we say? That one's pretty, oh, 7 years unlucky. That one's really unlucky. So I thought seven was supposed to be a good thing here. How about this rabbit's foot? What do you think on that? Have you ever even heard of that any longer? Lucky or unlucky? That one's lucky, okay. Unless you're the rabbit, that's right, right. How about this nice shiny penny head side up on the sidewalk? That's lucky. What do you think? Lucky, unlucky? Okay, and one more here, just for good measure. It wouldn't be the same without walking under the ladder. Is that lucky or, oh, that one's unlucky. Okay, what do you think? Lucky, unlucky? Unlucky, okay. So now, you see, here's the thing. Up until modern times, we really didn't know a whole lot about things like diseases and how that stuff was caused. So for most of human history, we tended to attribute those things to bad luck or nasty spirits that came in from the forest. But well, let me ask you, do you get a cold because of bad luck, or is that from evil spirits that live in the forest? We need to build a totem pole and scare them back into the forest, right? Or is it because you're being punished by God, or is it really more like germs? Which one of those things seems to be the real answer? Yeah, the last one, germs. But so you can understand how our ancestors might have turned to these charms and thoughts about luck and things like that, or totem poles to scare away wicked spirits or hex signs here in Pennsylvania, right? But I want to talk with the big people today about how faith and God sort of sees this stuff and how it, well, doesn't really fit in there very well. So thank you, little Blackie, for your time with me this morning. So, I think you can go back to your seat right now. And thank you all for playing along with my lucky or unlucky game here, right? So may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. So how many of us here are superstitious? Nobody? All right, how about a little stitious if you're not superstitious? I mean, you know, I think this is so ingrained in just people, you know, who we are, right? So, you know, one of the current accusations against Christianity and religion in general is that it's all superstition. But I contend that Judaism and Christianity in particular, the Bible indicates that these are anti-superstitious faiths, even though they propose a supernatural God. So my first point here today is, what is superstition exactly? Well, by definition, superstition is making a connection between two events or objects and events that really are not causally related. One doesn't really cause the other. My sermon today is going to be good because I remembered my lucky $2 bill. Actually, it's more likely to be good because I took a lot of time to prepare for it, not because I remembered my lucky $2 bill. The root of believing superstitions is, is actually called adventitious reinforcement, which is a big word, but basically it means that when a person begins to worry that something bad is going to happen because of an action they did or didn't take or an omen or something that they saw, and in reality, there isn't any connection, is there? The $2 bill up here isn't going to help me be a better minister. And by the way, you know, black cats and bad life events, actually, science and history ought to tell us otherwise. In 14th century Europe, black cats were eliminated because of this very superstition that they were wicked. But the result was an increase in the rat population. The rats brought fleas that carried the plague that devastated Europe's cities. But this superstition and following these superstitions makes the superstitious feel secure in their world. By contrast, my second point is what's different about faith. Faith in God can be defined as a commitment to finding an ultimate meaning in life. It's absolute faith that requires hope. In fact, genuine faith is unthinkable without hope, and a prerequisite, a requirement for developing faith is trust. We have hope because we trust God. And we don't just blindly do this. We base this trust on the evidence of his revelation. Whether or not God will cause something to occur is no longer our concern. Our concern is trusting him in whatever circumstance. And to this end, faith requires practical application in the world. And unlike superstitious delusions, faith gets modified. In fact, it has to be. The faith that I had at first, well, it had to mature as life events caused me to dive deeper. The Bible understands superstition as narcissistic, that is, a self-centered attempt to control life's events by persons that lack faith in the one true God, who feel themselves to be under an existential threat. Interestingly, the Bible, in my estimation, has human nature just pegged to a T. The Bible message proposes that people either have the one true God or they go out and superstitiously create another, a small g God. You know, China right now is in the process of eliminating Christianity and other religions. Many Chinese are proud of that, by the way, because they buy into the propaganda that comes with this, that their country is becoming post-superstitious. It's no longer going to be superstitious. Yet this very thing happened. As many of you recall, prior to my ministry position, I brought students into our country to study here from China and elsewhere. And one of those was a young lady who went to school at Berks Catholic. And she complained throughout that year that, you know, we were trying to force her to believe, well, first the complaint was we were trying to force her to believe in white man's religion. And I pointed out that Jesus was Asian, so that didn't get her very far. But that kind of morphed into, you want me to become superstitious and believe this. You know, the funny part of the story is, at one point, I was meeting with this young lady's father, and during the course of that meeting, her mother came into the room and announced that she could take her SAT now, that mom had spent $2,000 buying lucky numbers. Okay. Got my point here. Humanity always looks for reasons why beyond ourselves. And I don't think we're honestly far behind in the West these days. You know, as our reading from 1 Timothy 4 pointed out, it warns that in latter days, people are going to depart from the faith and give heed to deceiving spirits. And all of these things are really the doctrines of demons. So no doubt in our arrogant pride, we believe that we're somewhat better, somehow more advanced if we can let go of these old ideas, right? Well, so my third point, how does God see this superstition? Well, the Bible takes a very tough stance on superstition. The Bible sees superstition as harlotry with other spirits, with those other little g gods. This, of course, is in direct violation of the first commandment. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. This commandment forbids honoring any other god but the one who has revealed himself as the one true God. And superstition, it turns out, is kind of like a perverse excess of religion. Superstitions give a power that belongs only to God to something other than God. And then idolatry, in turn, causes us to worship that. That humanity falls into superstition shouldn't surprise us. As our own reformer John Calvin himself noted, the human heart is an idol-making factory. And if we're frankly honest with ourselves about this, you know, how many of us, even the faithful here in church every Sunday, have felt the allure of these idols, the allure of money, pleasure, power? How about placing inordinate faith in science or medicine? How many of us are tempted to make those little g gods out of our own desires or out of the state, or see ourselves even as those little g gods? If that doesn't do it, well, how about this one then? 1 Samuel 15:23 informs us that when we rebel, it's as though we're in the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as idolatry. Superstition is essentially trying to circumvent God. That is, going above or beyond or around God in some vain attempt to get what we want. Now, Halloween is often considered spooky. Well, this is where this message is going to get a bit spooky. My fourth point here is, what exactly are these superstitions that the Bible is talking about? Well, broadly, they're the occult or magic. And both of these words in their own language, Greek for occult and Babylonian for magic, mean tapping into hidden knowledge. Hidden knowledge explains these connections between, for example, my lucky $2 bill and my great sermon, or that rabbit's foot and it's a good day to do business. But more horrifyingly, it includes things like placing faith in and sacrificing to other deities, namely Moloch. You know, Moloch worship involved sacrifice of children in the fire. Basically, the child was laid on the red-hot arms of an idol, and while loud music was played to sort of drown out the child's screams of agony, you know, all to bring better fortune to parents. While this is inordinately evil sounding to its core, the worship of other pagan deities doesn't get any better. The Bible continues with divination, that is, looking for signs from the divine. Well, ancient divination involved many different practices, such as reading animal behaviors, or the clouds in the sky, or the stars, or even the entrails of animals. Interpreting omens is a specific sort of divination in which an oracle, that is, someone that can speak for the gods, tells the meaning of certain signs. Divination is most similar to our modern superstitions in that, you know, this sign, whether it be the lucky seven portends good luck or the 13 portends bad luck or whatever, that's a form of divination. Sorcery is interesting. The Greek word actually here, now bear with me on this because this language game is kind of one of my favorite things. So the word that we translate as sorcery in English is actually pharmakia in Greek. It means to charm or enchant or to soothsay. And the use of pharmakeia are magic or charms or potions or cures or medicine. Now, I'm not giving an anti-medicine sermon here, but all of these things are done, you know, to bestow good luck. When we go to the doctor, we don't just take medication for good luck. We're taking medication specifically, but you might have noticed that we get our word pharmacy from this very word, and given that drugs do affect the way we think, you know, you can see the connection here the ancients would have seen between spirituality, that is, our inner drive, and pharmakia, that is, drugs or these other charms. So Leviticus 19:26 couples sorcery and omen reading with kind of an odd thing, the drinking or eating of blood, and then the observation of times. Well, what is this all about? Well, so, in biblical thinking, blood was where the spirit resided. And this is actually common throughout the world. Even the American Indians had this idea. You know, when you kill the buffalo or the deer, you should drink the blood out of the heart that, you know, you have obtained the spirit of the animal. Well, the Bible takes a rather dim view of this, you know, and in actually ancient Middle East, sometimes the wasn't limited to animal blood, but also people. See, in the biblical view, blood is where the spirit resides also, but it's reserved for God, and it's to be returned to God. The observation of times is to follow the advice of a soothsayer or fortune teller and claim that, well, today is my lucky day, so I'm going to go and start business today, or today is an unlucky day, so I'm going to stay in bed and pout, or whatever it is you do on unlucky days, I'm not sure. But, you know, mediums, witches, wizards, these were said to have the ability to consult with familiar spirits or demons. A demon is simply an evil spirit. A familiar spirit is a spirit known to a spiritualist. Familiar spirits serve or prompt the spiritualist, enabling them to advise and prophesy. So this is where this gets to be kind of gray because, well, witches might do divination or sorcery or have the power to consult spirits or the dead, as apparently the Witch of Endor did for Saul when he sought her services. Strictly speaking, witchcraft is the casting of spells. That is the pronunciation of curses or blessings on others. It's an attempt to control or influence their behavior by magic, that is, this hidden knowledge, knowledge revealed by the familiar spirit. So the witch's spell, by the way, could be as simple as gossip. It could just be, I know your secret, and you're going to do this my way, or everyone else is going to know it also. That is actually a form of witchcraft right there, because it's an attempt to control how others behave, you know, using knowledge that isn't widely known to the public. And I believe that this is how witchcraft, this kind of gossipy thing, is how it got so deeply connected with women in the West, because, you know, us guys, we just never have all the information our wives want when we find, you know, we say, well, you know, we heard you ought to pray for Dave. Why? What's wrong? I don't know. Just heard you ought to pray for, you know, we don't have enough information to pull this one off, I don't think. But anyway, I've got to land this plane here, and I realize that. But a medium is someone with the power to summon or invoke other spirits, such as a dead person's spirit, in order to give them temporary possession of their body. So this is done so that the clients of the medium can consult with the spiritual realm regarding the future or other advice. Luck or fortune, biblically, means to be judged well by supernatural beings. That's what it meant in the Mesopotamian world. To be judged well requires keeping in touch with supernatural forces through supernatural practices. In this specific cultural context, spirituality and luck are connected with well-being. As you might imagine, the lines between these things are rather hazy. How many of us believe that life will go better for us because we sit here Sunday morning? More on that one next week. But fifthly on this, you might have also noticed the Bible is silent on whether or not these things really work. And it needs to be, because whether or not they work lies in the experience of the beholder. And any such pronunciation would just ignite an unnecessary argument. But beyond whether or not they work, the Bible is clear on one thing. The practitioners do not derive their powers from God. If anything, they work against him. The occult certainly doesn't develop faith in God and trust in his plan for our lives. If God is God, why do we need to believe in anything else? He should be all sufficient. Yet human nature keeps us searching for luck. So what could be wrong with visiting the circus fortune teller, you might ask? Aren't there good witches who pronounce healing? This is the culture we live in today. Lucky stones and lucky charms. Isn't it comforting to hear from heaven that grandma is there and she's proud of you? But what if the fortune teller promises good and then it disappoints? Don't we then tend to go back to God and say, God, you didn't come through for me. I've heard this is how it was supposed to be. What if your dead relative is proud of you while you're straying from God? Will you not just then continue down the path that you're on? Frighteningly, I believe that it's entirely possible that for the spiritualist to have these powers and to truly believe that they're doing good for their clients, all while setting up situations that lead their clients farther from faith in the one true God. But so one might ask, don't biblical characters themselves also cross this line? Daniel, for example, interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Yes, but Daniel doesn't invoke spirits to do it. He turns it over to God himself. No magic involved. In conclusion, I would propose to you that while many of these ancient practices seem unconscionable, like child sacrifice, or just plain bizarre, like reading the entrails of a dead animal to determine what move we're going to make next, as our culture moves away from faith in the one true God, we will see these things creep back in, even in all of their bizarre and cruel nature. Halloween, trick-or-treating as a fun cultural activity, is much different than trying to circumvent God. There's no spiritual purpose to what our kids do on October 31st. And there's no real superstition, just having fun. But conflating the reemergence of the pagan past with good, fun, and lightheartedness like Halloween, well, this calls for real discernment. And just for perspective, lastly, here are the five things we usually attribute to luck that the Bible tells us God actively controls. Little things like food for the birds, Matthew 10, 29. Random things like the roll of the dice, Proverbs 16, 33. Powerful things like those who control us, Proverbs 21, 1. Bad things, but for our good, Genesis 50, 20. Good things and every good gift, James 1, 17. Luck isn't real. God is real. Let's honor God.